On this episode of Skeptico, we welcome back biologist Dr. Rupert Sheldrick.
Anyone who looks into this case, the deception is so obvious in this case that it's just hard to understand how he can even think he could get away with it. But then again, of course he's going to get away with it.
Yes, and what it sounds as if is this, here's a preposterous claim on television about a psychic dog. He investigates it. He then claims that he's shown it doesn't really exist. And that's the end of the matter. He doesn't mention the fact that he did 4 tests altogether, that I did 200. The whole thing was entirely parasitic on my research. But then he portrays himself as this kind of heroic debunking figure who goes in and exposes how people fool themselves about their dogs and so forth.
What is going on here? What do you think is really behind this?
Well, personally, I think it's just what Wiseman says it is. I think it's a tendency for people to see what they want to believe, only to notice evidence that fits their dogmatic point of view or their belief system. Basically, Wiseman is a dogmatic materialist. People who are materialists aren't people who don't believe anything. They're people who have a really strong belief that the mind is nothing but the brain, that free will doesn't really exist. We are just robots. He tries to prove that in this book. So I think we have to see that we're dealing here with a fundamentalist belief system of people who pretend to be scientific, but are not.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and today we have a very interesting interview with Dr. Rupert Sheldrick. But before I get to that, I wanted to make a special announcement. Now, as some of you know, Dr. Sheldrick has been working on an experiment regarding telephone telepathy. That is, that sense that we have that we know who's calling before we answer the phone. And he set up a very interesting website to do that. And we here at Skeptico have managed to shake loose a little bit of funding for anyone who's at an educational institution, either undergraduate or graduate school, who wants to get involved in this research, who wants to run it as a class project, as an independent study, or as more formal research. So if you're at an institution that might be interested in doing this, please drop me an email and let me know, and let's get you started on this, because I think it's very interesting research. It's worth doing. It's worth investigating, and we'll throw a little bit of money at it just to get it going. And of course, we'll also be happy to share some Skeptico airtime with you so that you can tell us your results. Please drop me an email if you're interested in that. But now let's go to my interview with Dr. Rupert Sheldrick. Today we welcome back to Skeptico biologist and author Dr. Rupert Sheldrick. Now, many of you know that Dr. Sheldrick has been nice enough to join me on Skeptico several times in the past, and he's a real hero of mine, not just for his innovative and imaginative ideas and research, but for his clear, straightforward manner of talking about controversial science and those who oppose it. So I'm really delighted, Rupert, that you've joined me on Skeptico today.
Yeah, pleasure to be back.
So there's a lot to talk about and a lot of interesting topics that I think we can get into. But before we get in there and talk about the interesting stuff, we have to cover some of the unpleasant basics of this latest round of disinformation. I really don't know how else to label it, from Dr. Richard Wiseman regarding your work and a book that you published a while back, titled Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home, which, of course, explores this mysterious telepathic link that seems to sometimes be formed between animals and their owners. And it's something that you've researched for a long time and have documented and spoken about and published about a great deal. So do you want to tell us a little bit, maybe first, let's back up and tell folks a little bit about that research and the original book?
Well, the research really was designed to look at the idea that telepathy and other psychic abilities, like the premonitions and the sense of direction, are part of biological nature. If humans have them, we have them not because we're special or supernatural, but because we're natural, and that these are normal abilities that occur in animals. So as a biologist, I thought, well, if these phenomena exist at all, they should exist in animals, and that's where I looked for them. And I collected thousands, more than 5,000 case histories from people who work with animals, including dog trainers, police dog handlers, blind people with guide dogs, riders, etc., and also vets and pet owners, and found that many people had noticed things that suggested animals could pick up their intentions. One of the easiest to test scientifically was the claim that many people make that their dog or cat knows when they're coming home, goes and waits at the door or window. The people at home see it waiting there, and they know when the absent person's on the way. And I found that there'd been virtually no research on this, so skeptics dismissed it as being just a matter of routine or the dog picking up sounds from the person coming home from a familiar car engine or smells from miles away or whatever, explained it away. But I did proper experiments to test this. We had people come at random times in unfamiliar vehicles, and we filmed the place the dog waited, and we found that with a dog called JT, that most of the time, 85% of the occasions when the owner was coming home, the dog was indeed waiting for her. He started when she decided to come home, before she even got in the vehicle, and waited there most of the time. This happened at random times of day in different vehicles, taxis and other vehicles that she'd never been in before. And we built up a body of evidence from this and other dogs showing that this seems to be a real ability and that it seems to be a matter of the dog picking up the person's intention. So that's really the background to this.
What intrigued me all along was that you devised a brilliantly simple experiment that can pull anyone in who's ever had an encounter with a dog or an animal and can immediately kind of understand what you're trying to do. So you really did a great job with this, and I was immediately interested in your research. But at the same time, what hooked me, and I don't know if it hooked other people, was the reaction that you got from the other side, that side of the scientific community that really reacts so strongly when anyone suggests that the underlying assumptions we have about our human consciousness might not be exactly the way that they are. And in this case, Richard Wiseman was that guy who stood up to create that deception, disinformation. So if you could go back and tell us a little bit about the first round of Richard Wiseman and Dogs That Know, because I think that provides an interesting historical backdrop to what's just happened recently.
Well, when I was doing this research, there was a program about it on television based on an experiment that was done by Austrian state television showing that JT really did do what I'd found him to do. They filmed it with the TV crew. It was the science unit. They did a proper experiment, and it worked dramatically. JT didn't go to the window when she wasn't on the way home, and he waited there when she set off to come home at a random time, even before she got in the taxi. Now, skeptics were asked to comment on this, and Richard Wiseman was and is one of Britain's leading media skeptics. And he said it was just a matter of routine, or it must have been familiar car sounds. He made all the standard criticisms, which are the things I'd thought of in the first 5 minutes that I'd taken an interest in the subject, which we'd already ruled out. So I invited him to do some tests of his own, which he did, and they gave essentially the same result. In my tests, the dog was at the window about 4% of the time when Pam wasn't coming home, most of the time, taking all the time she was out, apart from just before she went home. When she was on the way home, in my own randomized experiment, the dog was at the window about 55% of the time on average. In Wiseman's test, the dog was at the window 4% of the time when she wasn't coming home, the same as my own, and 78% of the time when she was coming home, which showed an even bigger effect than I'd observed. But incredibly, he then appeared on TV and made press releases, wrote a scientific paper in a scientific journal, claiming to have refuted the dog's ability by saying he'd given a false alarm before she set off to come home, and therefore the rest of the data could be discounted. He then produced a video clip, which he's just put out again on the internet as part of his book launch, showing the dog going to the window, and it makes it look as if the dog just goes over and over again, and there's no pattern or reason, and it's just coincidence that it's waiting at the door when Pam's coming home. It's deeply deceptive, and his own data show, as you've shown by discussing them with him on Skeptico, that in fact he replicated my own results. But you wouldn't guess any of that, and you wouldn't know that he's admitted this on Skeptico in his new book. The new book, Paranormality, which has just been launched here in Britain, starts with the very opening sentence, is, "As I gazed deep into the eyes of JT, several thoughts passed through my mind. Was this cute little terrier really psychic? If not, how did he manage to make headlines around the world?" And so on. At that precise moment, JT gave a small cough, leaned forward, and vomited on my shoes.
Well, we have to give him some credit for his writing style, which he's
a good writer. This book is excellent light entertainment.
It's just a deception.
Well, the whole book is a deception. Richard Wiseman started his career as an illusionist, a stage magician, and his PhD was on the psychology of deception. And in this book, he certainly practices what he preaches. What he tells us is that people see what they want to see, and he instructs his readers in the arts of deception so they can fool their friends and carry out cold reading, pretend to have psychic powers. And interestingly, he even shows people how they can airbrush away the past.
Let's talk a little bit about that. You know, whenever you say someone is deceptive or someone is airbrushing history, it sounds so horrible that people immediately dismiss it and say, hey, you must have a grudge. You must have something against Richard Wiseman. But anyone who looks into this case, the deception is so obvious in this case. The misinformation is so clearly, outrageously obvious that it's just hard to understand how he can even think he could get away with it. But then again, then that'll get into the interesting part that we'll talk about in a while, and that's that, of course, he's going to get away with it. He already has gotten away with it for a number of years. And if we look at historically the history of psi and the history of parapsychology research, people have gotten away with it over and over again. So there's no reason to think that he wouldn't be emboldened in this effort that he's doing, because it's built on a history of this kind of misinformation. But before I get too far with that tirade, I'd like to break down in very simple terms some of the misinformation that we have here. And what I'd direct your attention to, if I could, is his representation of how he first came to know Pam and JT. Because here is a case where you talk about airbrushing someone out of history. You are not even mentioned as being a part of this experiment with this dog, JT, and with her owner, Pam Smart. I mean, you're not even mentioned. This is all Richard Wiseman, if you read his book, correct?
Yes. I come in an end note. He says that I also did some experiments with JT and came to different conclusions. But that's the only mention. Most people don't read endnotes. And what it sounds as if is this: here's a preposterous claim on television about a psychic dog. He investigates it. He then claims that he's shown it doesn't really exist. And that's the end of the matter. He doesn't mention the fact that he did 4 tests altogether. I did 200. And that I'd been doing it for a year before he appeared on the scene, and the only reason there was a TV show at all was because I'd organized an experiment to test this with the science unit of Austrian State Television.
Moreover, and correct me if I'm wrong, he doesn't mention that he used your camera.
No, the whole thing was entirely parasitic on my research. But then he portrays himself as this kind of heroic debunking figure who goes in and exposes how people fool themselves about their dogs and so forth. It is completely outrageous, but as you say, he's got away with it before. He's been exposed. There was an article by Chris Carter published only a few months ago detailing his deceptions in detail, with, blow-by-blow accounts, exact quotes, etc. But that's completely irrelevant. It's as if none of that has happened. And he's now creating the illusion that the whole thing's been dismissed, and that's the end of psychic pets. It's just a matter of people fooling themselves.
What is going on here? What do you think is really behind this? Because it's easy, once you get into this and understand the extent to which this is misinformation, it's easy to spin out of control with conspiracies and all sorts of strange ideas. What is really going on here? What do you think? What's your best guess, having been in this for as long as you have?
Well, personally, I think it's just what Wiseman says it is. I think it's a tendency for people to see what they want to believe, to believe what they want to believe, to only to notice evidence that fits their dogmatic point of view or their belief system. And he himself is a perfect example of that. He accuses people who are interested in psychic phenomena or do research on them in an open-minded way of being fooled or of self-deception. But basically, Wiseman is a dogmatic materialist. He's, the people who are materialists aren't people who don't believe anything. They're people who have a really strong belief that the mind is nothing but the brain, that free will doesn't really exist. We are just robots. He tries to prove that in this book, deceived by our senses into believing things that fit with our beliefs or our pre-existing beliefs. And I think it's as simple as that. He's dogmatically committed to that point of view. He firmly believes it. He's totally convinced that the mind and the brain, none of these things are possible. Therefore, the evidence must be flawed. People must be either deceiving themselves or deceiving others. So I think we have to see that we're dealing here with a fundamentalist belief system of people who pretend to be scientific but are not. And in fact, I only realized this today when I was reading his book, that in fact what this is something that pretends to be scientific but which is not. And the word for that is pseudoscience. What we're dealing with here is a particularly virulent form of pseudoscience. And it's propelled by this very deep belief system. And because they're so sure they're right, so convinced that the materialist worldview has to be true, and that it's equivalent to science and reason, then there's not really much point in wasting time on evidence you know in advance must be false.
I can't help but wonder that there is something more to this. And it doesn't have to be conspiratorial in the way that we normally think of it in terms of a bunch of guys meeting in a smoky back room or anything like that. But the fact that certain people of a certain stripe, atheistic, dogmatically materialistic stripe, are put in a position where they have the microphone, are promoted, ideas are spread more widely, and that other people are treated differently or at a lower level, at a level that we don't even see, don't get advancement, don't get the next grant, don't get even a job in academia. I do have to wonder if there isn't some degree of the system taking over and promoting a certain set of ideas and directly opposing another set of ideas. Because, again, looking at the broader brush of history, this has happened over and over and over again.
Well, I think that's true, and I think that's the situation we're in. I mean, Wiseman's book, for example, which doesn't stand up to critical scrutiny at all, has had a fantastic run of publicity here in Britain. It's it was featured in The Guardian as one of the chapters as an article. He has an article in the current in The New Scientist, a very recent New Scientist. Again, no critical response, no one sort of putting another point of view. He's been on the BBC. He's had a huge, full-scale national publicity here in Britain about this book, with very little a chance for anyone to say anything opposing it. But I don't think it's so much a conspiracy as the fact that many people within the scientific world, and especially science journalists, are committed atheists and materialists. They have a worldview. They think that the scientific understanding of the world, their view of the world, is science and reason. Everyone else's view is muddled or prejudiced or illusory. And that they're, I think, honestly, they've convinced themselves that they're propagating the truth, and that other people are stirring up muddles and delusions and so forth. And Now, I think the reason that Wiseman got, and he's got a pretty free run of the British media, is that the people who control the liberal media, the New Scientist, The Guardian, and so on, most of the people in charge of theirs are, in fact, people who share his views and for whom his what he's saying is music to their ears, and they want to promote it. You know, it's just as if The Guardian was run by dogmatic Roman Catholics and someone came along with some statements from the Pope, they'd give them high publicity. You know, and so if the BBC was run by the Vatican, then, you know, the Pope would be getting all this airtime, not Richard Wiseman. But the fact is that the people who control the media here in Britain, and I think in the US it's a similar thing with the New York Times, New York Review of Books, and the main intellectual media, on the whole, tend to be strongly influenced by people with a materialist and atheist worldview, and they therefore favor and promote people whose views agree with their own. So I think that's just the way it is, and we do have a kind of intellectual establishment which has this set of prejudices, dogmatic belief systems, which make it hard for genuine science, genuine inquiry, to get a fair hearing. And certainly, they make it impossible for it to get any fair funding, because there is no official funding for any of these unorthodox fields of research, even though most members of the public are actually very interested in them.
Let me push that a little bit further and play it out a little bit further. And it's speculative. I understand that. But I have to wonder if this idea that lies underneath your research and lies underneath a lot of the other psi research and certainly the near-death experience research that we've looked at on the show doesn't get at a very unsettling proposition for our current society, the way that it's formed. And I know that sounds kind of grandiose, but it is. And the idea that our consciousness isn't just a product of our brain, that our consciousness does violate our basic understanding of how we experience the world in terms of space-time, and that maybe our consciousness extends beyond our death. All these ideas are not only hard to process personally, but if we step back and look at them in terms of the impact they would have on our society, on our institutions, I think they're very threatening. So I can't help but wonder whether or not there is someone who's looked around the corner a little bit and said, you know what, that's not really a great idea for what we're trying to advance here in terms of our materialistic capitalistic system, in terms of our organization that we have, Western society. And again, that's kind of a very broad area, but I just wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I think that this particular conflict of views goes back a long way. It goes back at least to the 18th century and the French Revolution. Then there was a very strong anti-religious movement. You know, the French Revolution tried to suppress the Christian religion. The temple, the Cathedral of Notre Dame was turned into a temple of reason. And they thought that science and reason represented the way forward, and that religion and superstition were what held humanity back. And that's essentially the Enlightenment worldview. Now, it has certain good things about it, and I'm all in favor of science and reason. But I don't see that that necessarily means that one has to reject all other ways of looking at the world. And I think the problem is that this Enlightenment rationalism is hardened into a dogma. The reason it's so difficult to criticize it is because the people who defend it, who advocate it, who believe it, don't really believe it. The point is that if you really believe the materialist worldview, it means you have no free will. As Wiseman says in this book, when you look at these psychic things and you realize how people are fooling themselves, it reveals us, as he says, to be the robots that we really are. Now, does he really think he's a robot, or does he just think that people like you and me are robots because we're influenced by evidence he doesn't think exists? Well, if he's just a robot, if he has no free will, if it's just his brain that's doing things, then you know, the whole of the legal system collapses because it depends on people making choices, being guilty or not guilty. If there's no real choice, then we couldn't have a legal system. The whole educational system collapses. And indeed, science collapses. There's no point trying to persuade people with evidence and reason in science if they're totally conditioned by the activity of their brains and have no free will, and they're simply robots. It's essentially a self-contradictory point of view. It's incredible, in fact. And yet, this extraordinary dogmatic point of view has come to occupy the highest pinnacles of the academic and intellectual world. And I think the reason they can't see how weak an argument it is, what a completely inconsistent worldview it is because in reality, I don't think anyone really believes it. I don't think Wiseman thinks he's a robot that has no free will. I don't think he believes that for a minute.
Right, but we've reached some kind of equilibrium there that I think needs to be maintained in order for the system to not be threatened. Because just as you said that the legal system is threatened by a true understanding of what it means not to have free will, well, the legal system and our industrial system and our military system is threatened by the idea of a spirit world, of a consciousness that extends beyond this life and in this world. And I'm just taking as an example, if reincarnation is true, and I'm not saying it's true, but if reincarnation is true, what does that mean to go drop bombs on other countries and unsuspecting civilians in the streets? What does it mean if we all are connected in some way? What does it mean to pollute other parts of the world? I mean, there's some fundamental rethinking that needs to go on that I kind of think we like to not get into too much. So this idea of maintaining the status quo, this equilibrium, even if it doesn't make sense, even if we have dogmatically Christian group on one side and a dogmatically atheistic group on the other side, at least we have balance and we can keep the train on its track.
Yes, I think it's partly like that. I think part of it is just a matter of the psychology of belief. You know, a lot of people have grown up in the intellectual world. It's more common in Britain and Europe than in America because there are a lot more people who are religious in America, not necessarily a Christian right-wing fundamentalist. There are a lot of liberal Christians, liberal Jews, and liberal Muslims. So not all religious people are dogmatic or fundamentalist by any means. But it certainly suits materialists to portray them as such. But here in Europe, that point of view is rather overshadowed by this kind of Enlightenment rationalist point of view. And many people who've been educated into Enlightenment rationalism, as I was myself, it was part of my scientific education. What's in it for people is they think, well, we're smarter than everybody else because we've seen through all these illusions. All these other people are going to church and kneeling and praying and stuff, and it's all just something going on inside their heads. There's no God out there. It's all just an illusion inside their brains. They're short-circuiting, you know, various sort of pleasure circuits or causing release of serotonin or something by their prayers, but it's not really doing anything out there in the real world. So it's this sense that science and reason have risen above religion and superstition, and people who have that worldview think of themselves as superior, educated as opposed to the uneducated, clever as opposed to stupid, bright as opposed to dim. And there's a lot in it for people to believe that because it it flatters their self-image and gives them a sense of being superior to others. So I think there are personal reasons why people believe in it too. I think they're mostly personal reasons rather than the system as a whole. Because when I give talks in scientific institutions, which I do quite often, I find the number of people within science, even among professional scientists, who have the kind of dogmatic Dawkins or Wiseman type position, is actually a minority. Most people are actually fairly open-minded. It's not as if the whole science community believes that or is desperate to keep this materialist show on the road. They have to go along with it to hold down their job because that is still the kind of established orthodoxy. But I think of it as being rather like Russia under Brezhnev. You know, it's a kind of orthodoxy to which you have to pay lip service, but which isn't necessarily something in which you deeply believe. I think a lot of people pretend to believe it, Some really do. Dawkins certainly does. He's an evangelist for this point of view, and so is Wiseman. But most scientists are actually more open-minded and are looking for something new. I think what's really important is we have to move on beyond this dogmatic, narrow materialism. Quantum physics alone shows us that it's not an adequate view of the world, let alone psychical research. And so I think we have to move on beyond it. That's where the real growth in science and the really exciting growth of science is going to be. But we're still stuck within this dogmatic orthodoxy.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're still an optimist. That's encouraging. I look at history and I look at William James on, and I say, there's really no guarantee that we will advance. There isn't, is there? I mean, we could easily just run past this little run that psi and parapsychology seems to be having, and it could just be a mere bump in the road, and we could go on business as usual for another 100 years.
Well, I don't think so, actually. I'm writing a new book at the moment, which is called The Science Delusion, and it's the subtitle is Dispelling the 10 Dogmas of Materialism and Freeing the Spirit of Inquiry. And I think materialism has 10 distinct dogmas, which is what I question in this book, and show that when we go beyond them, science opens up and gets much more exciting. And I think the reason that we're going to have to question them is they're not working. For example, the genome project, which told us that, you know, the human genome would lead to a new era in medicine, we'd soon be able to have totally personalized medicine, there'd be a huge range of new drugs and products come out of it. People speculated literally hundreds of billions of dollars on this, and practically all of them lost their money because it's come to very little. We now have a problem called the missing heritability problem, where it just, the genome project simply turns out to have very, very little predictive power. It's led to more problems than it's solved. And consciousness studies shows that the materialist attempt to understand the brain, which people 15, 20 years ago thought we'd soon figure out by means of brain scans, etc., that consciousness itself is an impenetrable mystery from the materialist point of view. And consciousness studies is now, you know, really getting going as a very exciting field of science. And it simply doesn't fit the materialist model. Neither does the genome project and biology, reductionistic molecular biology. It's just running into problems over and over again. It's simply not delivering. So I think science is stuck. And although newspapers constantly tell us of new breakthroughs, that's not what's really happening. In medicine, too, you know, there's a dearth of new drugs. The new drugs that are coming out of drug companies are really more expensive versions of existing ones. There's very little that's really new coming out. I think that this kind of science that we've got at the moment, this materialistically a reductionist kind of science, is running into the ground. And it is in physics too. We've got superstring theory with 10 dimensions, or M theory with 11, that are untestable. We've got cosmologists adopting a multiverse theory, postulating trillions of unobserved universes for which there's not a shred of evidence. Over and over again, science is no longer confidently going forward with discovery after discovery. It's reaching a kind of dead end. It's in a kind of cul-de-sac. And I think that, together with the rising, the crisis, you know, the healthcare cost crisis and economic crisis and stuff, is going to lead to a major, major shift in worldview. I may be, and I always have been, an optimist. It may seem like extreme optimism to think that at the moment, but I think it's closer than it ever has been. I think we're going to see a really big change quite soon.
Well, that certainly is the future that I'd like to imagine. So this new book, what's the title of it again?
The new book I'm working on is called The Science Delusion, and the subtitle is Dispelling the 10 Dogmas of Materialism and Freeing the Spirit of Inquiry. Now, it won't be out until next year. But one thing that will be out sooner than that, and it's worth mentioning it in this context, Alex, is that my book, Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home, is coming out in a new edition in the U.S. next month, in April. The new edition includes an appendix called Controversies and Inquiries, and in it I summarize my various encounters with skeptics over the years, including Richard Wiseman. So I'm hoping that that will enable people to see, you know, just how the debate actually goes. Anyone who's interested in the phenomenon can actually look at the reactions of the skeptics. And what comes out from looking at the big picture of these case studies of skeptics is that not only don't they know the evidence, but they don't want to know the evidence. Over and over again, it turns out that the evidence is irrelevant because they think they already know the truth.
Well, we'll certainly keep an eye out for that. Dr. Sheldrick, once again, thanks so much for joining us today on Skeptico.
A pleasure.
Thanks again to Dr. Rupert Sheldrick for joining me today on Skeptico. If you'd like more information about this show or any of our previous shows, please visit the Skeptico website. It's at skeptiko.com. You'll also find there an email and a Facebook link to me. And by the way, thanks to those of you who've joined me on Facebook. It's been a pleasure getting to know you. And as well, it's been a pleasure getting to know all of you who email me and share your comments on the Skeptico website or on the forum. It's really, really enjoyable for me to see a community developing around this show. So I hope you'll continue to do that, and I hope you'll do anything that you feel is appropriate to help this small community grow. And in that regard, I'm going to do my part by continuing to pump out some interesting shows, and I have several of them coming up in the near future. Stay with me for all of that. But until then, take care. Bye for now.